grinders, and welcome to the Experience Grind podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences that we've gained along the way. My name is Sean, and today I'm joined by my Les Bros. First up, you don't want to shoot me.
Kyle, you encourage this, and immediately you're the first to shake your head in disapproval. I'm the only one in solidarity who sat with their head fucking solitary, not moving, stationary. Right. I was like, yeah, brother, do it.
Like a true lesbro.
Like a true yeah. lesbro. Let's go, lesbros.
Am I starting this over? I'm starting this over, no. aren't I?
Not at all.
If you okay. want to, dude. It's your show. It's your app.
Nope. Yeah. Nope. You don't want to shoot me, do you, Ryan? Do ya?
No, I don't. I wish I knew what the next part of that quote was to finish off and be a good yes, Andrew. I would never shoot my
you
great
don't
leader host.
Know shit about me.
Brian's got it. Also, hey, Brian, you planned yeah. this whole thing, didn't you? You dropped that earring down the sink on purpose, didn't you?
I just had to see you.
Okay. Well, Brian, you got to do me a favor, a personal favor for me. You got to start respecting Kyle the way you respect me, capiche? And you, Kyle, you got to stop acting stupid. You're going to earn this respect from Brian's going to give you, capiche?
You know, I look at this, I don't even see any code anymore. I just see blonde, brunette, redhead.
Corky is Trinity 1.0, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was.
Damn it. That was like my fucking thesis
that.
Statement tonight.
Oh, my bad.
She should have been
Trinity. I didn't mean to jump on your...
Oh.
You're yes,
not
going
to like me.
Just oh, I'm going to die on the Gina Gert. Nah, probably won't. Sounds like I'm not going to.
Well, it looks like a lot of people are jumping on that grenade or dying on that hill or whatever. But what's up, boys? How we doing tonight? See how I put pretty it out good. To all of you to just see who would talk over each other
see,
immediately?
Yeah. Try to start the dual headphone podcast where we're holding multiple conversations at
two
once.
Two different
fuck,
shows
I can't
at
do
once.
That to myself. Can't do that to myself. Like
I think it's the future.
We already set out. The number on Patreon last week of how much money we would need to produce one of those. So,
does anybody remember? Is no, it 500? No. Is it 100?
Like you know what? You're the one who five people it. You can set it right now.
It's five people at $100. I will.
That's what it
we
was.
We will edit yeah. an entire video, not video. That is a lot. An entire episode where it's just. All of us having different conversations with each other, and I will split the audio from left ear to right ear. You get two shows in one. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
It's brilliant.
Guys, it's Nudvember. It is Nudvember. And I've got to ask really quick. This movie, Bound, brought to us by the Wachowskis. Is it Wachowskis or Wachowskis? Or
I believe Wachowski.
I think Wachowskis.
Well, now we're at an impasse.
Now I feel like it's actually what Ryan said, because Kyle just like on purpose says the name wrong.
Here, let me ask this. Who has watched hours of behind-the-scenes footage of The Matrix?
I have two, motherfucker. I also own the box set.
You watched them all?
We did it together.
I feel like I call them Wachowski.
So the Wachowskis.
I actually think it is Wachowskis.
Hey, Wachowskis.
I think it's
Wachowski.
Wachowskis.
Hey there. Do you got your paperwork, Wachowski?
That's the chick from Beetlejuice?
No. Monsters, Inc.
Monsters, oh. Inc. Yeah, dude.
Oh.
Mike Wazowski.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
God, I'm so dumb.
Roz. Wachowski. That's her name.
Is Ross.
What a beaut. Everybody needs someone like her in your
it's
life.
Chowski. Wachowski. I just looked it up.
See, Ryan was right the whole time.
Like chow mein. Anywho. back to Nudevember. I gotta ask before we even get into this. Do you guys feel like this movie qualified?
I mean,
just a yes or no here. Yeah. And then we can get into more later. Do. Okay.
Yes.
Brian.
I don't know. We got what? A nipple?
A couple. No. And you got some frontal shot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get a frontal shot?
Yeah, the camera work was outstanding.
Uh-huh. Oh, that was
nice and panning and sweeping. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if so by then, a nipple shot, you mean like if I had 3D glasses, I lost an eye.
That's such a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So
that was like, yes.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. Listen, if we can start the whole thing off with Jason Segel's penis, then yeah,
man,
this counts.
That's literally the only nudity. I think literally it just has to have nudity in it to qualify.
That Here's did not question. Start this month, did it?
It did just start this month. Yeah.
It did? Wow. Wow.
We just inadvertently created this month. Here's a question. Would naked male butts count? Like, so what we see of Joey Pants in this movie, but that was it. Would that count as a Nudevember pick? Does it have to be dick if it's a dude? It.
Yeah, I feel like there. You could get away with it, but like there are better options.
Okay. So that's when this has been going on for way too long and we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Do we do dude butts?
Sure. Gotcha. Because I feel like the none of us really strived for it, but every one of our movies this month did have full frontal nudity at some point.
Okay.
Hmm.
That was not necessarily the intention of Nudevember.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it wasn't planned.
That wasn't the spirit of it, but it did happen. Yeah.
What if next year my pick is Charlie's Angels Full Throttle? Oh, that's not full frontal. Never mind. Fuck.
Is it, what? No. Gosh. even forgetting Sarah Marshall had that the tit shot real quick.
Oh yeah, the picture from the
Mia Kunis one, yeah,
and the extended cut had him having lots of sex with many girls that were all topless. So
that's true.
Okay,
that extends it out,
but it definitely counted for the full dong. Anyways, who had seen Bound before? Because listeners, that is what we're talking about.
Long that's Ryan. Long way to see
just you. Ryan.
Ryan.
Just Ryan.
Right on. Well, let me get into the story for the benefit of everybody listening at home. Honestly, I really, or in your car, or work, or wherever you're listening to this, I don't care.
Available streaming on all platforms.
Honestly, you should watch this before I get into this, because it's one of those, I don't know, spoilers. So, fresh out of the clink. Hard as nail, fixer-upper, Corky lands a gig fixing up an apartment in a building where she immediately becomes smitten with Caesar, a money launderer's wife, Violet, who lives on the other side of a paper-thin wall. Well, actually, the wife becomes smitten with her, and I've just now realized that I've said smitten, well, now three times too many, and honestly, none of this even matters. After the two inevitably become romantically involved, Corky overhears a man, Shelley, being tortured by Johnny Marzoni, the psychotic son of a big Donny boy. Turns out that Shelley had been skimming money from the family, and after losing a couple of digits, leads everyone to the stash. Johnny ends up blowing Shelley's head all over the money, which leaves Caesar to clean up and count the cash to have it ready for Gino, the aforementioned bigwig and daddy to crazy boy, to come and pick it up the next day. Now here's the deal. We mentioned that Corky had done some hard time, a whole 5 years of it, but I hadn't mentioned what it was for. Redistribution of wealth, see? Sneaky fingers, see? And a plan is hatched. Steal the money and blame it on Johnny. Fingers. Yes, she did. Setting up Caesar. Things go about as well as one would imagine. But that's only if you imagined it not going at all as it was expected to. Couple of dead mobsters, Corky and Violet being found out, and Caesar having to balance all of this with disposing of bodies, finding the money, and staying alive without having to dip down. And just when everything looks to be looking on the bright side for him, with Violet saving him from the local boss, he had to go and do shit up and ends up getting himself killed by Violet, who sets it up to look like he skipped town. Violet and Corky successfully redistributed some wealth to themselves and ride off to the future. Boys, that's basically Bound. And we're going to kick it. We're going to do something different here. And we're going to buck the trend and we're going to start with story.
Like we always do. We buck the trend every week.
I was writing it down and I was like, what is story first or character? Oh, wait, no. It's story.
We used to do character and it made no fucking sense after we finished talking about the story.
We just talked about what the movie's about. Now let's talk about the people in it and then go back to what it's about.
Oh, man. Long-time listeners, and by long time, I mean at least last week, will appreciate that. Guys, I'll kick it off here. I really honestly enjoyed this story. I enjoyed what was done here. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think we can get into genre and other things in the style because there's a lot that I can say about like kind of what lends itself to how the story's brought to the screen. But I think as a story, I thought it was fun. I thought it was really thought out, really well thought out. And I'm going to go this five. We going five here?
Yeah.
Five? Out of five. Okay. I'll give it a four. I'm going to give it a four. And then I'm going to send it to Ryan because he's next to me on the screen. And I just want to know what his mouth going to say.
Show me what you do with that pretty little mouth.
Weirdly, not the first time I've heard that.
Today.
So I've got a really interesting relationship with Bound. I've definitely seen this movie a couple times before because I like the Wachowskis for the most part, even though I think they're all over the place in their output. I think they're always interesting. I think Bound feels very much like a first movie, and even when I saw it way back when, I liked it. I never loved it. There's something holding me back, and I think on this rewatch, I learned what it was, and it's the same thing that's holding me back, and I think a lot of these similar movies, because Bound is a gender-swapped double indemnity, and actually, I think the gender-swapped does a lot of favors for it, and I like it a lot more than double indemnity, but I think I've learned I'm just not a huge noir fan. I like when noir is integrated into other things and it's blended with other genres. But when we are straight noir, I find a lot of it a little slow. And I do think the story is good. So I'm going to sound a lot more negative than I mean to. Sorry, listeners. But I think
script, right?
It's a really good slow build up. And I think that slowness is all intentional and it needs to be there because the final act is dynamite. I think the final act is really good. They set the stakes perfectly. They get you to where you need to be and it's all really good. The dialogue feels like it was ripped out of a 50s fucking noir movie, except again, just with some queer coding and then the gender swap stuff. Like, this is brought in, and I think that adds like a new kind of dimension to it. But I still am a little bit held back because of the noirness of it. And so this is my struggle. So I think for story, I'm going to go with the 4 with Sean. I think I might be a little bit more reserved than him. But I do want to recognize its strengths because I do think there are a lot of strengths there. And again, for a first movie, what they're able to do and how like succinctly they do it, I think is really admirable. I think the Wachowskis did great here. So I'll be a 4 too, but maybe a little bit more reserved. Sorry, Sean, I saw your hand pop up.
I was gonna chime in because I forgot. Script goes in here, and you mentioned noir, and that's what I was alluding to when I said it would probably come up in style. And I think I can still just save what I was gonna say for style. So. All right. Send it back to you.
I'm going to throw this to Kyle because knowing him and his love for noir, I'm expecting a full 5.
You'd be wrong.
Damn it.
I do love noir, and that might come up more later. Okay. But yes, I do love all things film noir. And as soon as this movie started up, I was on board. But overall, like, story-wise, I think it's, we've all kind of kicked it around, but I'll say it's overall basic. Like, it's a mob heist movie. It's also a bit of a bottle movie. It doesn't move around a lot. We're only in essentially two environments. One is just, like, a big room. But it's all very condensed. It's all very tight. But it uses a lot of tropes, and I think that's fine because it plays with the tropes. Like you say, it gender bends a lot of them, but it still keeps a lot of this familiarity for us to stay grounded as the viewer, which, you know, I try not to say as just like a guy who's seen tons of movies, and like, I can't help that, you know, something like that is going to stay in that base level because it works and it's good, especially for the average moviegoer that, you know, they just... On that level, like, it works really well. It's a very easy to follow caper. There's a lot of, like, double crossing, a lot of backstabbing, like, things going in and out, constantly happening, and it's easy to follow. It doesn't get bloated like the Magic movie we talked about a couple months ago, where it's
just... Now You See Me.
Yeah, like, and I'm not shitting on it, but just to say as a contrast how giant and extraordinary that one was compared to, like, this, which, like I said, is very grounded, but I don't think it's perfect, but I think it does do a lot. Like I said, number one, being able to follow everything that's kind of happening so well, I think gives a lot of credence to it. And I'm not enthusiastic, but I'm not reserved. I'm middle of the road 4. And I kick it to Brian.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to say anything that's different from what anybody else has said. I liked that it was a small scale. I mean, I am a heist movie whore, and I like seeing this much smaller scale kind of thing where it's like, hey, this is two people planning a heist for like that night, and you get the classic tropes of the montage where it's like, then we're going to do this, and it shows them doing that, and then like you're caught up. But like also, the whole thing goes wrong, and when that happens, I'm like, oh yes, we're getting into like a really awesome third act now. So like, I'm with everybody. And then you throw in lesbians, and I'm like, all right, maybe I'm a high 4 on this one, boys. I got nothing else to say. I think it's very close. It's teetering on the 5, but I really enjoyed the story.
Your third act right there was fantastic. So, oh man, I think that was all really well put. And I actually am going to buck the trend here. Because I want to go into style next.
Ooh.
Because I think talking about this story is very connected with the style. It goes kind of hand in hand with the style category here too. Because there are some things, like Brian said, he's a heist movie whore. I'm in the same boat. It's one of my favorite genres of movie, hands down. And it really threw me off. I didn't realize this was going to have like such heavy noir aspects to it. And then I'm just listening to Jennifer Tilly and I'm just like, What is Jennifer why Tilly do you sound like you're girl. Ripped out of a 1940s movie right here? And it took me a couple.
Oh, the damsel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It took me a little bit of time to really get used to it, but when it did, that marriage of that like noir theme with a heist plot, mixing in gangsters and shit, like it was just checking all of these boxes for me. Like, whoa, here we go.
Got a femme fatale, but she's seducing a lady.
Oh my god. Can the boxes get any more checked? Anyways, I also thought the music was great throughout the movie. I thought I would give a 5 in style for this and shoot it to Brian.
A 5, you say?
Yeah. I'm very heavy on that.
Yeah. This, like Ryan said earlier, this you could tell this is a first movie. There's a first movie feeling to it, but it still feels so Wachowski. There are these certain, like, this overhead shot in the bathroom, and there's these just such cool things they're doing. They're like already experimenting with camera angles and stuff, even though this is their first film. And I rarely do this, but I do want to point out the cinematographer. It's Bill fucking Pope. Bill Pope, when Bill Pope comes to town, you're having a good time, because this man is an absolute professional when it comes to the cinematography. And they were worried that when they did their sex scene, that the producers were going to try to cut in a lot of body doubles, extra nudity. So they decided early on that they were going to shoot the sex scene as a one-er. And it is so well done, the way they rotate around the entire scene. And like, there are only certain things, certain body parts on screen at a time. And they're all watching remotely from another room, because it's, you know, skeleton crew on set for a sex scene. And they're like shouting through megaphones, like toes. And Gina Gershon is, you know, curling her toes. And it's like, okay, hand and face. And just the way this is done. And I mean, I'm getting a little into direction now, but the style is very good. There's still some work to be done to get to that Wachowski flavor that we come to know. But overall, I think the blending of the noir and the heist and the small stakes and the big stakes for a small setting. It's just 4. I agree with Sean on the music to a point. I think the score is very lackluster, but I like the actual soundtrack, the songs they used, I think were pretty good. But 4. And I would like to hear from Kyle.
Go ahead, Sean.
I would like to say I enjoyed a lot of the music that I heard. I will admit there was a lot of times that I turned down what I was watching quite a bit, so it didn't sound like I was listening to porn or watching porn in the basement.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that is a lot of moaning and gasping. And
you're mispronouncing art.
There's a lot of art going on my screen that would be misunderstood and underappreciated. Listen, from upstairs.
There's a lot of art in my browser history then.
Go ahead, Kyle.
I had never seen Bound. And so it was great because, as I have attested, many people know this about me, I fucking love The Matrix. It is one of my all-time favorite movies. I've seen it countless times. And what was crazy, like watching this, you can see why they got The Matrix. Mm-hmm. The style, the slickness, the things that they do. And Brian mentioned like that Wachowski flair, and he mentioned the overhead shot with like the different bisecting levels of the camera, how it story tells. One that I loved that I saw in The Matrix 2, like versions of it, is the cop, like Joey Pants puts the rug over the blood stain, and the cops come in, and the cop stands on the blood and it squishes out, and the mm-hmm. camera cuts to it and it shows it, and we see it. It's never referenced, nothing. It's just, it's a way that they just unconsciously build tension in the scene and just ratchet it up. And it's so great. Like, it's just that little quick cut. We see it. We see it's happening. Oh, shit. What is going to happen here? Everybody's just all this stress levels playing off. And like just that slickness, I could see so many hints of like the Matrix and like those Wachowski flares that they come to be known for. And
oh, there's blood dripping out of the bathtub and the cops in there pissing. What's going to happen?
It was just, and then nothing happened. Like, it's a flush. Yeah. It comes out because the cops don't care. Again, that tension break.
They're it's just up and that. Down. It's so good.
They're fucking amazing with it. And for like a first real flick out of the gate, again, insane. Add in the noir aspect, which I didn't even see coming down. And I feel that they nailed that too. And they played with it. My one complaint is soundtrack two. I just wish with it being so noir based, it kind of would have gone a little more jazz.
Yeah. Heavy.
Like a little more like wire brush, loose hi-hat, just sort of like setting things up when she's listening, like sort of low key. I don't know. That's being gritty. That said, I fucking loved every bit of this. I'm giving it a 5. Ryan?
I think of everybody so far, I might be most in line with Brian. I also agree with Kyle and Brian. I'll just say, like, everything Brian said, I agree with. Like, literally everything. To a T, I agree. I also was underwhelmed by the score. I think it lacked identity. It felt a little generic. It felt ominous tones. If we're talking forgetting Sarah Marshall. It really just didn't stick with me at all. I think a lot of the style visually is there, but it's formative. I'm not as high on this. And I go back to like The Matrix and like their other movies, like the way like the lady in red when Cypher's doing the simulation, how she pops out and just like that, or like I think in V for Vendetta, and they didn't do V for Vendetta, but they did the screenplay. So like they designed it. Jupiter Ascending, garbage ass movie, but like some of honestly, a majority of those frames are like jaw-droppingly
gorgeous. It's a fun to watch.
It's a beautiful movie. It's just beautifully realized. And Bound is fine. I think it's a little understated and reserved. And obviously, this is budgetary reasons. We'll get into, I think, more in direction there, potentially. And I also think it's because they're still honing their stuff. But I love that shot, that overhead shot in the bathroom. I think there are many really good things. But I also think the color palette's a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish they pushed certain things visually a little bit more. And I know they have pushed it a little bit more. Which is a very long-winded way of saying I agree with Brian anyway. So it's a 4. But I just also have to get my little bit of negativity out there. But still, ultimately, really positive on the style.
Right on. Kyle, can you kick us off with characters? Characters.
Ooh, I don't know. I can. This one might be my more contentious one. Because again, playing off the first level with story, like, overall, the characters themselves are basic, but the limited ones we do have are, number one, I will probably get arguments with this, but for me, Joey Pantilione stole this show. He was the most exciting part to watch for me.
Yeah. Joe Pants is amazing.
He kept me entertained. I see why. I'm glad that they struck up such a good friendship with him on this film, and then they brought him in because they loved working with him for The Matrix. But I'm talking about The Matrix too much. I think Joey Pants is great. I think Jennifer Tilly's great. I think Gina Gershon is great. I don't know where to put it. Gina Gershon is not used very well in this movie in the second and third half. I feel like the second half of this movie, she's just standing next to the wall listening. And
it's no longer her story.
I feel like it's sort of wasted. Like, I know Jennifer Tilly was attached pretty early on, and I thought that I had read that she was like on in like some sort of producing role, because she eventually switched roles. She was going to be Corky, and then which is also insane to me, because she is like tailor-made for Violet. That is Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of typecasting, but she fucking nails Violet so well. And that's, I'm not perfect, but it's not middle of the road. I'm going 4 again, because I think they're great. I love Gina Gershon, what she does. The writing's a bit stiff for some of her stuff. And we can argue about her and Carrie Ann Moss later and which one's the better fit, which I'm sure we will get into. I think I see why she didn't get it over Carrie Ann Moss. I think she's just a little too harsh feature-wise, especially. That's just me, man. I can see it. But I think she's great as Corky. She's entertaining. She really carries the tough girl attitude. It sucks that she just gets knocked out like 3 times in a row at the end. Kind of undersells. She could have got something up on one of those. But again, it's... Yeah. What do you do? It is like more so like, I mean, he would just punch her in the fucking face. So that more story. I'm skirting her at 4. 4 and do kick to Ryan.
God damn it. I honestly did not think I was going to be whole ass agreeing with you, especially with your contentious Corky comments earlier, but I think I fucking agree with everything you said. I'm also at a 4 for all the same reasons. I love everybody and what they do with the roles they're given. I do think Gina Gershon is absolutely underused in the last half of this movie. I will only say about the Joey Pants thing. It is... Honestly, it's the easy role to walk away and like having fun with, because it's the flashy one. It's the Jack Sparrow here. It's the,
yeah, of course,
yeah. It's the, he gets to be Nick Cage and eat the scenery, and he eats the scenery great. So I don't know. 4. I'm 4 with Kyle. I really like the characters. I think they're very solid. I don't have much else to say different. I think they're all, maybe the worst you could say is at times a bit basic, but they all have arcs and they follow through and like it all makes sense. I don't have complaints. That sounds like a 4 to me. So, Sean.
Boys, I'm a sucker for a psychopath. Christopher Maloney.
I kind of wish he'd gone even more psycho.
Me too.
Yeah, we don't get to see much.
Keep going. I don't care. Dude, like, I loved his role with Johnny, like all the way up until he gets shot in the knee and then just absolutely riddled. Like when you've got Caesar insinuating that he took the money and he's just like, what are you talking about? I'm looking at a dead man. You're a dead man. And like, oh man. I was like, get him. Love that character. Huge sucker for that. I absolutely love it. Other than that, I agree with literally everything everybody else said. I just wanted to give a shout out to Chris Maloney because that character fucking ruled and I enjoyed it so much. 4. Was that everybody? No, Brian.
No, it's still me. Yeah. Joey Pants is a lot of fun to watch in this. But yeah, he does have the easy role to be the fun one. Christopher Maloney, we've seen him get so unhinged in other things that it felt like as a psychotic character, he was being a little reserved, which is crazy to think because like, this is like a mob guy who's the son of the big boss. And he's, you know, just haphazardly killing people. And he still doesn't seem quite crazy enough. Gina Gershon, Jennifer Tilly, both excellent. I think I have to agree that Gina Gershon's character is completely just bound in the second half of the movie and doesn't really get to do anything. But I do like the way that they kind of ramped up the distrust between the two of them. Like they're very early in this weird relationship that they have, and they're not sure if they can trust each other. And it turns out that like, even if they had completely trusted each other, everything would have blown up anyway, because they were, you know, anticipating that Caesar's going to do one thing and he does a completely opposite thing because he thinks the same thing they do. He's like, oh yeah, they're going to think I ran with the money if I run. So I can't run. I got to stay and figure something else out. And they're like, shit, that's our whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, between Gina Gershon's face and Jennifer Tilly's voice, you've definitely got a lot of character happening here. A lot of memorableness. There's something just slightly off about both of those things. And but they're great together. Their scenes together are phenomenal, and that needs to be mentioned, that the chemistry between the two of them is weirdly so 100%. Believable when you read the behind the scenes stuff that Jennifer Tilly talked about this movie. Just like how it was just like hanging out, and then you watch these scenes and they're like very erotic, and you're like, oh my god, like they're just like talking about going and buying shoes, but the way it's filmed, it looks like they are a couple. It's just very well done. Four for characters.
Amazing. That brings us into entertainment. Yes. Entertainment value. And I would like to hear from Brian first.
All right. I was entertained. Are you not entertained? I said what I said at the beginning there, talking about heists with lesbians and, you know, sucker for a small scale, you know, die hard noir heist with lesbians. It's all happening in one room, a la Die Hard, you know, it's, you
get the ramping
tension and all things I very much enjoy. But for some reason, it wasn't enough to get me all the way there. I liked this movie. I would watch it again. I don't know if I ever will, but I wouldn't mind it. Which I guess is that's a four, right? That's another four. I'm straight four so far. Of course, it does take into consideration box office, which this movie did not cost a lot to make, $4.5 million, but it did end up making like $7 million worldwide. So, you know, it got its money back for being as low budget as it is. You kind of wish it had performed better, but, you know, this is like, at the time, what is this, an independent movie that nobody really carried? It didn't premiere in a lot of places. Like, its opening weekend, it made $900,000. So, yeah. And we'll talk about what critics and everything thought about it later on. But four for me, and I want to hear from Sean.
I was entertained. I was thoroughly entertained. I can echo a lot of what you said. A big thing that keeps me from going five is that, and it's not even over 2 hours long. It got to a point where it did feel a little long in the tooth, or it was starting to feel a little long in the tooth before it really like just went just barreling ahead. And when I'm watching something, I can feel that. I know that I'm cognizant of the time, and like I check to see how much time is left in the movie. I'm like, oh, it's only halfway done. Sometimes I'm excited. Like, sometimes I watch a movie and I'm like, oh man, I hope there's another 2 hours left. And you know, you click and see. And this one, it was like, okay, we're in like the back half of this, right? And this is before everything, like all the shit hits the fan and whatever. Even when the shit hits the fan, there's still like 50 minutes left in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when I saw that, that's about when I looked and I was like, man, what the fuck are they going to do for another length of what I just watched? All of that to say, like, I really enjoyed this movie. Super entertained. I'll give it a four as well. Go to Ryan.
I'm going to buck the trend, and I'm going to give this a three, and I'll just go ahead and say it right out. I'm positive. Three is positive out of five, so just know that. Going back to what I said earlier, I sometimes find when we lean into the noir tropes a little bit boring to watch because they feel so familiar. Same with watching like a Western that's very beholden to like Western tropes. I don't think they did enough different outside of just like, this is like that noir, but with lesbians. And I love lesbians. I love lesbians more than I probably love noir. but I just don't think there was enough there for me. Yeah, I said it and I'll fucking die on that hill. I'll take a lesbian movie over a noir movie.
I was questioning the probably because there's no doubt.
Sorry.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, that's all I was saying.
Keep hyping me. Keep hyping me. Probably. I like it. no, I just, so it does present a distance for me that like I've still not been able to get past, even in a rewatch now at this point. And I do feel like maybe part of that is the first two acts. And in this movie, as Sean pointed out, I think is very weirdly structured because that third act is very long. And the third act is great, but I think it makes this weird, wonky second act. And I also felt it. I was kind of like, come on, what are we doing here a little bit? And that could just be my impatience, but I don't know. I liked it mostly. I'm not like over the moon with like the pacing of everything here. I think three, positive, not overly positive is where I'm at. Kyle, my good buddy.
You're not bucking much of a trend because I'm with you right there. Three, and it feels, I don't know, like I was entertained, but as much as a noir guy, this did get very long in the tooth. I was so bored watching Gina Gershon stand next to a wall. And then it's so funny you hit it right at the 50-minute mark, Sean, because that's when I switched from watching it upstairs and I was moving downstairs and I hit pause and I was like, oh, wow, there's still 50 minutes left? I thought this really ramped up. And I was like, okay, what are we going to do? Hilariously, right at the 50 minutes left mark. So, kindred spirits, buddy. But yeah, total overall three, because it does get really, it bogs itself down. It's entertaining. I had fun, but it's mostly a three because it was a middling, I'm not in a rush to get back to it. It didn't overwhelm me, even though I liked a lot of it. I'll just go watch The Matrix.
Yeah.
Sean?
Can I get dropped down to a... I've already done mine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you drop me to a three?
Sure.
More I think about it, the more like if I really think about if the length of the movie is on my mind as much as it was while watching it, was I really that entertained to be a 4 out of 5? Probably not. So I will have to go down to a 3.
You've convinced me. I'm going to keep mine a 4.
Yeah.
Bucking the trend. Like it.
Stay true to your school.
Direction. Kyle. Talk about some Wachowskis.
I will, because we talked about it so much in style, because so much of the Wachowskis' direction is style. They get the substance of film that like so few directors do. Like, there's a lot of directors of movies. There's not a lot that like you stand out and you refer to and that people know like by their name. But I would definitely say the Wachowskis are up there because of The Matrix and because they have that style, that way that they can visually communicate story beats to you is just, it's a nice, fantastic touch that they have. It was really cool to see a lot of the proto stuff from where they would go. Like I said, watching this, I instantly clocked like, oh, I see why they got The Matrix, because this is slick. This is cool. This is small budget, which surprisingly the first Matrix did somewhat have. It was kind of restrained in what they wanted. But it showed all these key factors that, you know, would eventually elevate them to where they are. But still so much of that, even in these big movies like Speed Racer, that still feels like a Wachowski movie, even though it's flashy and all over the way. It's the way that they're telling the story visually you can just pick up on. And I think even though entertainment value was a 3, the things that did hook me, it's weird. I want to go 4, but that pacing at the end was so bad. And I do have to put that on direction, which is, I guess, what will prevent me from giving it a 5. So I'll stay 4. Kick it to Brian.
Oh, yeah. I talked a lot about this already in style and actually a little bit in character and technically in story because they also wrote this movie. So, like, this is like through and through a Wachowski movie. We got written, directed, for the most part, I mean, very much self-produced to a point. This is them putting a vision into film and getting themselves the street cred. That's not right, but that's the closest thing I can think of right now. The street cred to do a Matrix. I think for a $4.5 million budget, they pulled off some really cool stuff here. And damn it, they're the Wachowskis. I'm with Kyle though because of the pacing, and I'm giving it a very enthusiastic 4 and kicking it over to Sean.
Man, when like with everything that we've said and we've talked about and. Even when you just said a $4.5 million budget. Okay, so the 90s are a really weird time. You can look at a movie and be like, wow, that was probably made for $1 million and it's got a $35 million budget on it in like 1993. Whereas the same movie would be made for $2 million now. It's crazy. So I see this and then it makes me think, what the hell cost $1 million in this movie? It took place in 4 rooms total. You know, that's gotta all be going to actors or something, right? But the cameras, yeah.
And film.
Yeah, camera film. Yep. Like, that's because there wasn't much put into a lot of other stuff. But with that being said, they really made it work in here. And Brian talked a lot about like the director of cinematography earlier, Pope. And I think that their vision in this movie led to a lot of really amazing shots too. Like I keep thinking back to a shot where Caesar opens up the box and you like see his panic and his panic attack, not just like on his face, but with the way the camera's moving with him and like how cool of a shot that was and mm-hmm. how it followed him for like the next couple of seconds. That was such a cool shot. And there's lots of little stuff like that peppered out through the movie, which you guys have already touched upon. but man, like Kyle said, the pacing's my big hang up on this movie. If this was like a smooth hour 20.
Mm-hmm.
I hour 20, I think would be like perfect, or an hour 25. To knock almost a half an hour off of this movie. And this is like amazing to me. I'm going to 3 here and I'm going to send it to Ryan.
Okay. I really like and appreciate what everybody said so far and agree, I think, pretty much uniformly with everybody. I will add, 2 episodes ago, we talked about Showgirls and specifically Paul Verhoeven and what a boss G director he was for what he did behind the scenes to make shit happen. And I think that's what I'm going to do for the Wachowskis here. Because if I remember the story correctly, I believe they went to like a bigger movie studio and I can't remember the studio, but let's just say it was Warner Brothers. It probably wasn't, but let's just say Warner Brothers. And Warner Brothers was going to give them a ton of money to make the exact same movie, but swap out the relationship with a heterosexual couple. And they fucking flat out refused and are like, well, fuck it. We're going to do it independently then. And just scrounged around and made it happen themselves by doing these smaller finance deals.
I believe what they said was that movie's already been made.
Oh, that's fucking great too. I love that. Yeah. That's so good. But I think I gave Paul Verhoeven a 4 for having just like the boss G director mentality. And even in their first fucking movie, they had the boss G director. They weren't going to sacrifice their vision. They had an idea and they're going to make it out there. is it 100% for me, this vision? No, probably not. I don't love noir. I just said it. I love lesbians, not noir. But they did it. They fucking did it. And they did it for cheap and it was successful. They made their money back in any advertising, which I'm sure there probably wasn't much. And honestly, they really kind of, I think we're ahead of a trend. Boys Don't Cry was like a few years later. And that was like maybe the other first time like I saw kind of lesbians as the focus in a movie, but we're not like making like that the thing. And even then, like Boys Don't Cry, I think makes more of it than like even this movie does. This movie, you could honestly replace them with a heterosexual couple and the movie's the same. It's not about that they're lesbians. So honestly, this movie's like super.
And it doesn't ever feel exploitative.
Exactly. It's really cool. Honestly, this is just incredible that they did this so early and were so confident as directors. I was at a 4 because that's where Verhoeven was, but I almost want to give them a bump because Verhoeven did that like well into the middle of his career. This was them at the start. But I'd just go a very high enthusiastic 4, a very enthusiastic 4 for director here. Direction, not directors.
I'm bumping mine up to a 5, damn it.
I'll bump mine to a 4 because, oh my God. I'll bump mine to a 4 because, man, Ryan, that's so right. Like this came out this was 1995, 96. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this in 2025 and it doesn't seem out of place at all to me. It's just something that like, I don't even think twice if that is something that I see. Like, I'm not Caller from Texas. I'm not sitting here being like, why is there two ladies kissing on my screen? I
wasn't on one of them sites.
Like, that is part of the world. Like, I see, that's not weird to see. But for that to come out in 1996 and to push to make that vision and make that happen...
And absolutely. To deny studio money for your first big budget movie.
Yeah.
Fucking baller. It's fucking baller.
Caller from Texas here. Caller from Texas. Is worldwide gross, is that the number of people grossed out by two girls kissing? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
That might be the best joke you've ever had in this podcast.
That was phenomenal.
I wrote it down and I forgot to fucking say it till Sean mentioned it. I was like, wait, I have a joke.
That might be the most smart Caller from Texas joke we've made.
Yeah. That was what happens really when you write things down. should learn from this.
Wow. When you write things down, pull it back up.
I write a lot
again.
Of jokes down. They don't all hit that good. So.
We've heard some of them.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You've heard all of them, and
Brian, where does that take us for Bound?
That gives Bound a total score of 80.
Wow,
which is a pretty good score from us, especially over the last couple weeks. We've been a little lower. ever since we gave that 100 to The Substance, we've been pretty conservative. We did give
it's not
Sir Marshall an 87, but 80's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
By comparison, Rotten Tomatoes is 87 critical, 83 audience. Wow. So we're below both of the Rotten Tomatoes scores, but we're above the IMDb score of a 7.3, way above the Metacritic score of a 64, and right smack dab on the Letterboxd score, which is a 4 out of 5.
We are become film snob.
We are. We have that recency bias, just like Letterboxd.
That's it.
Wow. All those reviews are from after the social media was made. So,
according to Rotten Tomatoes, Caller from Texas is getting to us. Get that
my favorite review that I saw on Letterboxd was just all caps. It says, "The epitome of be gay, do crime." I thought it was pretty good.
It's pretty
pretty good.
That's great. I like that they say that as if that's a catchphrase.
It is.
It is.
Engage in crime?
It is a catchphrase.
That is a catchphrase?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
It's like it's a meme catchphrase, but yeah, it's a catchphrase. Yeah,
on the internet, but it's very popular in the LGBTQ circle.
I would imagine people who are gay and doing crime.
Mm-hmm. I think it essentially
is
all
vigilante
kind
shit?
Of in the word.
Well, no, I think it all stems like everything from Stonewall, the original
Stonewall
riots,
Jackson?
Where they're throwing bricks at cops. The Stonewall riots.
Oh.
Where they were trying to arrest crossdressers and drag queens and
yeah.
They were all throwing bricks at the cops, and that was be gay, do crime.
Oh, that checks out, yeah.
Do crime.
That makes sense.
I hope it was bricks of cocaine.
Be gay. Do drugs. Well, hail Satan.
All those bricks.
Well, I hope you guys and you listeners enjoyed this month of Nudevember. This is going to be wrapping it up for this new thing that happened because themes. But next week is going to be kicking off the start of Action Movie December. And guys, is it going to Brian, or is there a lineup with some of the other guests?
I think it usually is gone one of us, guest, one of us, and then our annual Michael guest. So it's usually Phil second, Michael fourth. So
okay. So Brian, that has you leading off Action Movie December. Unless you traded weeks with somebody, and I don't remember that, but
nope. I have not traded weeks. I've been waiting for this moment.
Okay. We'll take it away.
There's a movie that I've been wanting to watch and talk about. I haven't seen it, but I've heard great things ever since I saw the first one way back in the Beer Me a Movie days, and then again in Action Movie December last year. I'm very excited to get Jason Statham and just continue the nudity for a little while longer. We're going to be talking about Crank 2 next week.
Oh, shit.
I think
Crank High Voltage. Is that what it's called?
High Voltage.
Yeah.
I'm going to call my shot Crank 2 better than Crank 1.
Hell yeah. That's what I want to hear.
I think.
Yeah. I think Crank 2, they got it. They're like, mm-hmm. Like Crank 1 was fun and it was an experiment, and then they knew the results from that experiment, and then they made Crank 2.
One of the best movie theater experiences of my life was Crank 2.
Oh,
like top five. Like the theater was into it and fucking hollering, and it was great. I was loving it.
Hell yeah.
Wow. Well, I cannot wait to watch that, and I can't wait to talk about it with you boys. But it's going to be like a week from now. But listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you are really itching to hear more from us, let me tell you what you can do. You can go right on your little clickety-clackety keyboard or on your touchity-touch screen and go to patreon.com/experiencegrind, where for as little as $100 a month, you can...
You get a really complicated audio
as little.
Podcast. We'll be encouraging people to talk over each other. Like I'm doing right now.
For as little as $100 for you and each one of four of your other friends, for as little as a dollar every week, you'll get a bonus episode where last week we had a great long video game conversation. This week, you're going to, at some point, we're talking about Gravestones, I think, and I don't remember the other half an hour of that.
Gravestones and a lot of Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks! Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Let's go, boys. A little Tom Cruise, for some reason.
Ryan thought he was Tom Cruise that whole time.
Ryan has brain worms.
RFK! Linktree/experiencegrind. You'll find the link to the Patreon there and to our Discord. Come join us there. Hang out. But until next time, Brian, you take it out. Because I could think of something inappropriate. Yeah.
I don't have anything. I wasn't ready for this. That's like the one part of the episodes I actually have to write.
Go bind yourself.